Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th day of August, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First, let us welcome Dennis, who generously and graciously stepped in for Steve Ray.
Always happy.
Who is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest.
Again.
Right. Again.
Hey, he knows what he did.
He smiles about it, too.
Yes, he does. All right, here we go. We said it was coming. We told you it was on its way, and now it's here. For over 30 years, we've thought of PCs primarily as Windows machines, which we owned and controlled. That's about to change forever. This isn't about Microsoft forcing us off Windows 7 to Windows 10 as fast as it can, although it has found many ways to push that agenda. This is about Microsoft abandoning the Windows platform as a conventional desktop. Microsoft is getting ready to replace Windows 10 with the Microsoft Managed Desktop. This will be a desktop as a service, or DaaS, offering.
All right, tell me more.
Instead of owning Windows, you'll rent it
right
by the month.
Okay, and what are the advantages to that?
Microsoft makes money
Microsoft
now.
They make money.
Well, do they keep it fully patched for you, or do they?
Yes, that's exactly what they do. DaaS is a new. Citrix has been doing it. VMware's been doing
it.
They've been making a living at it for years. Microsoft has offered remote desktop services, formerly terminal services, for ages.
And they have their VDI service, right, where you have a machine that just that just remotes into a bunch of other machines?
Right. But Microsoft Managed Desktop is a new take. It avoids the latency problem of older Windows Desktop as a Service DaaS offerings by keeping the bulk of the operating system on your PC. The big thing about the many remote systems is what's actually running is on some other machine somewhere else.
Yeah, some server farm or something.
Right,
else.
And Microsoft, it will indeed run on their machine that you have at your desk.
Okay.
But there's the less latency.
Right.
Right, yeah. So it happens.
In the past, it's always been a little bit of click, get the result, click, get the result, and it's not quite as seamless as having your stuff processed locally.
Right, but you will no longer be in charge of your PC.
Okay.
Instead, it will automatically be provisioned and patched for you by Microsoft. Maybe you'll be okay with that, unless you've been under a rock. You know, IT departments have not been happy with Microsoft's twice-yearly major upgrades to Windows 10. Let's call it what it is. These aren't upgrades or updates. They're service patches. Take the Windows 10 April 2018 update, please.
Yeah.
It came with more than its fair share of bugs. What was especially annoying was that update followed up so many of Microsoft's own programs. When even Word, Outlook, and File Explorer lock up, you know you've got a mess on your hands. So with this track record, do you want to pay good money to let Microsoft maintain your desktop for you? Yeah, that's what I thought. Nonetheless, DaaS Windows is coming. Microsoft has been getting away with the old-style desktop model for years now. Just look at Office. Microsoft would rather have you rent Office via Office 365, or what are they calling it this week? Microsoft 365? I forget what they call it. Buy Microsoft Office and use it for years. Microsoft, which helped lead the personal computer revolution, is trying to return us to the old, centralized, controlled mainframe model. Forget that noise. If Microsoft continues this course, soon your only real choices, if you really want a desktop operating system, will be Linux or the Mac OS. Oh, you'll still have Windows, but Windows as your personal desktop? It'll be history. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft wants to rent Windows to you monthly. Your choices are, that sounds great. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, rather. What happens if I stop paying? Notice nobody talks about that.
That's true.
Linux, here I come, and guess I'll buy a Mac. So far, we've got 29 votes. Linux, here I come, is in the lead. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. Next. Followed by what happens if I stop paying. Guess I'll buy a Mac. And one person thinks it sounds great. Well, there's always one.
Did they talk about the pricing? What it was cost? Did I
no, they have not yet. No, okay. No. That's the big. That's the big to do. Now, look. I know you're going to have more to say about this.
Probably yes.
And I believe you should.
This is opening up Pandora's box.
Right. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the second. The first link there is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is for August 18. Microsoft wants to rent Windows to you monthly. So join us there and then join us here. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I mean, they have so much trouble right now just getting the patches out for the operating system, you know, on a regular basis to keep your machine running. Can you imagine, though, if they switch platforms and do these patches and that, and it messes up your machine and you're not able to use it for, say, a week or until Microsoft gets around to patch that patch?
Right. Now, I should say that, in fact, the Microsoft Managed Desktop is actually a business-only thing right now.
Okay. Yeah, and I think I've seen it at healthcare offices and
right,
things like
yeah.
that.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
But, I mean, that's so detrimental. Your business is going to go down for a week?
Right.
Or you tell patients coming in, oh, sorry, we can't. You can't have this procedure this week till Microsoft updates it because we don't have your records available.
Right. Well, the thing really is...
They'll all have SLAs.
Right. The thing really is that a lot of small businesses will love this.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they don't have an IT person.
Yes. Yeah, the people that I work with don't have on-site IT. And they treat IT as a cost of doing business. And what they look for more than anything else is to have consistent, predictable expenses.
Right.
And this Office 365, for example, instead of every few years me going to the boss and saying, well, you need 10 grand to go get all the licenses for Office that you need. And by the way, if you only do three of these people and not all the rest, then you'll have different versions that they're all saving to, and it's right. going to be a mess. So they feel like they've got to bite the bullet and spend 10 grand out of nowhere. But right. if they knew that it was going to be some number of hundreds of dollars a month or dozens of dollars a month or, you know, $8 or $10 a month per user, then right. it becomes much more predictable. And that's what businesses
But you're
love.
You're putting your trust in that they're actually going to keep you up and running. I'm sorry. Microsoft has lost any faith that I have in them in being reliable. Their reliability is totally zip.
That is one of the problems people have. The other issue is, don't forget, this whole idea here is just for businesses right now. But Microsoft has publicly stated and certainly has said in their earnings reports to their investors that in the long run, they want all Microsoft desktops to be subscription-based.
Mm-hmm.
They do not want to sell... individually, they don't want to give away
the OS
Windows anymore. They don't want to sell Windows anymore. They only want to lease it. So step one is doing it for businesses, which will accept it more easily.
Yep.
They can get all the bugs out of the system. But they have stated both publicly and in the earnings reports to their investors. And you don't lie to your investors in the earnings
report. But here's the thing,
though. They want it to be managed for everybody.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, as a business owner, I would not trust them. And businesses have been gun-shy right now unless they've been absolutely positively forced into going to Windows 10 to stay with Windows 7 because all these upgrades, companies can't afford to go out and just say, oh, we need 60 new machines because Microsoft is updating their operating system and it demands more power. Hello, that's not my budget.
Well, and that's part of the issue, which is that you're right. Microsoft has lost a lot of credibility and a lot of trust with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. They put out the last few patches. I know upgrades, but you're right. They're service patches. Mm-hmm. The last few service patches they've put out have been junk.
Yeah.
And have bricked machines. Well, is Microsoft going to send somebody to your office to fix that? I don't think so. So really, it's not. It's a halfway measure.
Mm-hmm.
They want to manage your desktops, but I'll guarantee you they don't have somebody to come on site if there's a real if they bricked your machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, no way.
So it's a halfway solution at best. It's the perfect solution for them. But that doesn't necessarily mean much for you.
Yeah, you're totally hosed. Right. I mean, forget it. They could care less.
Right.
You know, the few that'll have the problems, oh, well, your collateral damage.
Right. For them, it's 1/1000th of 1%. For mm-hmm. you, it's your entire business.
Yeah. And I'm down and I can't work or do stuff? Yeah, no.
I see it's all ending in tears, frankly.
Like I say, they're not even going to... A lot of companies are fighting to go into Windows 10.
Right.
I still see a lot of companies staying with Windows 7 because it's reliable. There are other programs that already run on that system, and they're happy.
I saw a statistic, 187 million Windows 7 machines still out there, still running, still running business.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. Because that operating system came right out of the gate, didn't need any big service patches, and it was brick solid. I mean, a few updates here or there, but otherwise, that system was bulletproof.
Right. I look at it from the user perspective. The UI was just so very similar to Windows XP. It was very different than Vista. And it was more solid and reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something where people saw it and they said, ah, this is something I'm familiar with.
Yep.
This is something that makes sense to me. As a person who just started using Windows 10 fairly recently, I can tell you that, oh boy, that's different to to click the square in the corner, to look at the giant list of apps that show up and they're all categorized alphabetically with little headings at the top. And you scroll through it, and things aren't where you expect them to be.
Well, that's why, again,
muscle memory from
classic menu. You can get classic menu.
That's true.
And put that on there, and then that takes you back to the Windows 7 look and feel, which I have on my machine.
Yeah, well, I remember that in Vista.
Right,
yeah.
And that's why so many people who go to Linux use a distribution like Mint, because it looks like Windows.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about Mint lately.
Yeah. It's a very good operating system. And as with everything, Linux is Linux is Linux, and then you just throw a front end on it. And Mint uses, I believe it's Mate, it's called M-A-T-E, Mate.
This is just going to dig in stronger even for Chromebooks. I mean, now that, you can do word processing and everything else for free.
And what's more familiar than your browser?
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that most OSs are going to move to a GUI that has services on the back end, much like Google's been doing.
Right.
I think Apple is working on a similar approach. I think they're all kind of shooting in that trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is just one step towards that. And it may not be for everybody. And I imagine that there will always be some flavor of Windows that you will run locally on your machine that if you want to administrate it, you can. They'll name it something like Administrator Edition or something. But I think for a lot of people, you know, think of all the people that are just perfectly happy having an iPad in their lap because they don't want to administrate anything. They just want to get to their email.
Right.
They just want to get to Facebook and scroll through it. But administrating, working out drivers, working out settings, that's something other people do. That's not for them.
Well, I definitely agree with that.
I think there's some market for that on the desktop space, too.
But I don't necessarily know that Microsoft is the way to go with that because they're not interested in you, right? If you have a driver, if you have the wrong driver for your video card, they don't care.
Well, yeah, and I mean, with all the embedded stuff, all the manufacturers know what all the video is already, and it doesn't change. You know, an iPad or a Windows tablet, it's all the same.
Right.
So
all
I think it's going to be the death of custom hardware more than anything else.
It could be, very much so. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Wurster, Meenik Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Wurster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we our sound bites, and we have Larry, who I hope has been waiting patiently on the line as we left him hanging through the whole commercial. Larry, are you there?
I am. I'm here. I enjoyed the talk about Windows because I have a Mac, but the rest of the family has PCs, so got to kind of figure out what we're going to do going forward, but right now. But the reason I called is recently we just came back from vacation, and I was awful concerned about staying in hotels and using a laptop or something with basically no security on Wi-Fi. So I've been looking and trying to educate myself about VPNs at home on my home Wi-Fi network. Want to know, do you think it's necessary and probably what's out there? I've started to read some of the information, and it's a little overwhelming. So I'll listen.
Sure. Well, I'll start with some basic information. Maybe not for you, Larry, since you've been doing some research, but for any other listeners we have out there. VPN, another one of the computer industry's TLAs, or three-letter acronyms. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and a VPN is a way to make sure that the traffic that your computer produces on a computer network is encrypted, meaning that it is scrambled in a very particular way and can only be unscrambled at the other end, so that anybody who happens to be listening in the middle, for instance, while you're using Wi-Fi that you don't control, just sees garbage. They don't see anything that they can make any sense of. Mm-hmm. A VPN connection allows your computer to connect back, or what I call phone home, to some other network. And lots of places, for instance, if you work at a college campus or for a bank or a large company and you're out on a sales call, you might VPN from your hotel back to your corporation or your workplace. A VPN is good for that because it means that again, nobody can see what's going on between your computer and home base. Many common routers that you can buy at your local electronics stores will allow you to set up VPN service right from your house. So if you are on vacation or you're otherwise away from your home and using Wi-Fi at a coffee shop in, you know, East Elbonia, you can set up a VPN connection back to your home, and all of your traffic will be routed across Wi-Fi where you are, across the internet, back to your house, and then back out through your home internet connection. So it's just as useful, it's just as valid as if you were sitting at home in your easy chair.
Okay, didn't know that. Didn't come across that one yet.
Yep, so that's the general idea. Now, depending upon which router you have at home, you may or may not have VPN service.
I don't think, right now, I think I have a Spectrum router, an UBEE.
Right.
So I'm pretty certain that doesn't have it, but I can certainly purchase my own router.
That's true. Yes, the router, the modem, the UBE modem that you have at home, would connect to a third-party router, and it could be one by companies like, gee whiz, Nick, how many different companies are there with routers?
Well, there's a bunch. I'm Linksys, Asus makes one, Netgear, D-Link,
yep.
All make good ones. I'm actually putting up a recent article from March of this year on the top six best VPN routers for 2018.
Right.
Oh, okay, good.
So once you have one of those at your home, it will plug into your internet connection on one side. And if you have any computers at your home that use a wired connection, which is always nice and reliable,
mm-hmm.
But again, it's not quite as convenient as being able to move things around that have Wi-Fi, then you'll be able to configure your VPN service on the router. And generally, you have to install a small piece of software on any computers that are going to connect to the VPN while they are away from your home.
Okay, and in my case, that would be everything.
Yep. So most major operating systems from Microsoft and from Apple have mm-hmm. the ability to connect to VPNs. There are many other acronyms that you'll learn about as you dig a little bit deeper into this.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to know is that you just have to match whatever flavor VPN you have at one end with the software that you install at the other end.
Okay. Now, what about services? I looked up PC Mag online from a couple of months ago this year, and they brought up top six, seven, you know how they do services. A couple of free, most are, as you guys were talking about, some subscription base, some very cheap, and some get into $10 or $12 a month or so for a VPN service. Is that one a good way to go, or can I just, would a router that will do something like this be the best way to go?
Well, either one is fine.
It depends.
Right? It depends.
So if your goal is, I want to make sure that my traffic is at least as safe as it would be as if I was sitting at home, then getting one for your home would be best. If your goal, other people use VPNs for different reasons. For instance, if you are living in the United States and you want your traffic to pretend that it doesn't come from the United States when you go to visit a website for whatever reason, then you can use a VPN to kind of obfuscate where a website thinks you are. Some websites serve different content or only allow you to use their content if you are within a certain geographic area. Without getting too much deeper into that, Nick, I think that that's probably as far as I would say. And those services allow you to subscribe and have your traffic routed through their equipment. Now, the trick is, if you're paying somebody else and you're connecting to a VPN for their service, you have to trust that they themselves are not going to listen to your traffic.
Right. That was what was on my mind. The moment someone else handles it, I got to trust them.
That's right. So,
whereas if you buy your own router that does VPN,
then you got a mate.
Now the problem with that, and it's not a problem, it's just something you got to know, is that sometimes your internet service provider will change your IP address. So before you go on a trip, you got to check to make sure you know what your IP address is.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right, because if you're going to connect to that VPN, right? Again, it depends. I haven't looked at them in a long time. Some of them actually end up using a domain name service, so you actually get a domain name, and it updates that and keeps it going. So before you buy one, check the specifications as to how exactly it works.
Okay. So I'm taking notes while you guys are talking. I got to tell you, I was almost terrified to put anything online, my phone or laptop or anything, while we were on vacation.
Sure.
Because the hotels, you know, everything, and they'll tell you right up front, this is open to the general public. And I just became paranoid.
Yeah, and well, you should. And I get that. Now, that said, if you go to a site that is HTTPS,
which most of them are these
days,
many more of them are than used to be, then your traffic to that site is encrypted.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So there's less need of a VPN than there used to be.
True.
So if the site you go to, in your browser, in the header at the top, it should say secure.
Right.
Google's actually going to change that.
Yeah, they've set that up, week before last?
Yeah.
Google put out a new version of their Chrome browser. And the Chrome browser now, if you go to a website that does not have that secure layer,
right,
it will tell you in advance. It will say, hey, you're about to go to a website that is not encrypted. Right. So people might be able to see what you're asking or what you're submitting.
Okay, I saw that because I upgraded everything just before I left, and I kind of understood the HTTPS. But, you know, when I go to a wife, not knowing what you've just told me, when I go to a site or a hotel and it says, you know, we're open to the world, I still didn't understand that to some extent I'm protected. And so I put my foot down with the family and said, everybody off.
Yep. No, that's fair. And again, you will be much more protected with your own VPN, but you are, for the site that you're on, you're protected with an HTTPS.
Right.
Okay. Didn't know that. That's good information. I did not know that.
Yeah, there you go. So now pay attention to how it comes up in the browser.
That's true.
Okay.
One other thing to know about VPNs is there's a certain amount of overhead involved in processing the traffic that you want to send.
Okay, I did read that so far.
Yep, encrypting it and then letting them decrypt it at the other end, read it, and then send your response back.
But I can live with a bit of a slowdown versus somebody hacking me and getting information I don't want them to have.
That's fine. Yes, as long as you know, then that's fine.
Okay. Well, thank you. As usual, you've given me twice the information I started out with and filled in some gaps. So I'm going to do a little bit more research and probably change what I have to some router that'll do it right here at home.
Okay.
Thank you for your help, guys.
Good luck. Call back anytime.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Yeah, you'll find that the VPN-able routers, I don't think that's actually a word.
But sounds right.
It is now, right.
Yeah.
The VPNable routers are, you have to have a little bit of knowledge to set them up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of important. But just knowing that if you go to a website that starts with HTTPS, the S stands for secure. and that anything you do on that particular website is secure. Now, be careful where you go, right? Because if there's a thing called a man in the middle attack.
Right.
If somebody attacks the router in the hotel and changes where that router is sending you.
Yeah, somebody can attempt to impersonate a secure network.
Right.
And so, as far as your computer knows, it can't tell the difference.
Right. So be careful of where you're going. So don't just look for the HTTPS, also look for the actual name.
That's right.
That's up in that thing. And that should be okay then. But yeah, so if you have your own VPN and you're going there regularly, you'll probably be safer, but it does take much more knowledge to set up.
It does. I think the one that I've used the most has the OpenVPN feature.
Yes.
OpenVPN, I think, is the open source approach to doing VPN, and you can get clients for the Mac and for Windows that will happily connect. Most of the time, if you get a router for your home, you can get the software directly from the router manufacturer. Now, us Mac folk, even though our Apple's worth $1 trillion now, we still have to waddle to the back corner of the internet to go find the appropriate drivers for OpenVPN, surprisingly. But it is something that is available, and yes, it can work. I've got a really good OpenVPN client here. I'll have to go find it. I'll bring that back in a minute.
But yes, you can put VPN on. You can use VPN on pretty much anything, including Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You can use a VPN on a Chromebook. So
and on your phones and tablets too.
And your phones on your tablets, so you can put it anywhere. Setting it up, as I said, is not necessarily easy at either end. Setting up that router in your home takes some work. Setting up your individual devices, your phone, your tablet,
you
got to
do
laptop.
Some reading, and you got to do your homework.
You got to do your homework.
But doable.
Once it's done.
Once it's set up, it's there.
It's done. So, yeah, there's and what's lovely about that is it does completely protect you. And as we've said before, Opera.
Yeah, the Opera browser.
The Opera browser is automatically VPN'd.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're owned by a Canadian company. So you're going through their server, and it's in Canada. So if you go to a site that doesn't, for example, Netflix, is country specific.
Uh-huh.
So if you're using the Opera browser to watch a movie on Netflix, you may not get the same selection.
Oh, because some things are geographically locked.
Right. So, for example, you won't be able to watch Little Mosque in the Prairie in America, but you probably can't watch some other things
in Canada.
In Canada, right. So it's a slightly different look. But what's nice is with some of them, when you log in, you can pick where you go.
You can pick where your traffic appears to have come from.
Right. Yeah. So you can decide to be from England. Today
South
and
America.
South America, tomorrow, wherever you want to be. And what's nice about that is as I have a friend who logs in to watch his BBC iBrowser player for BBC from a VPN in England. I have another friend who set up a Slingbox. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he could watch his shows off his parents' TV in England.
Oh.
But... now you can do it with a VPN that connects to a British VPN service.
Right.
Now you pay for that in most places.
There's a fee.
It's not that expensive.
It's not expensive, but you pay for it, and you should be aware of that. And then you are now trusting, as we said before, anytime you connect to anybody else, you have to trust them with your traffic. Right. Now, if you are using HTTPS...
That's
on top of a VPN, then your traffic is already encrypted as it goes through somebody else's VPN. So you're kind of doubly protected.
Right.
The reality is that your traffic goes through 50 machines in the internet anyway. So any one of them, you know, you have to trust all of them simultaneously. So it's a tougher thing than you think to be secure on the internet. And HTTPS and a VPN help you do that. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And I want to remind you folks, if you get a chance, please stop out on Park Ave. We have a tent over there, and please stop by and say hello. And if you get a chance, you know, there's always the giveaways and that type of stuff that they're normally doing there. So do it while you're down there and enjoy yourself.
And throw
yourself
a buck in the cube.
Yep.
Sure.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Hey, are you still?
Still.
You do ever, look a lot like him.
Forever. Yeah.
Okay.
Steve sent us the real one.
That's right.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York, on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Speaking of, you were talking about VPNs and stuff, and don't forget Hotspot Shield.
Hmm. Right.
I've had great success with that. That's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, it's
a pretty free VPN.
Right. And as I said before, The real problem with something like that is you know, who do you trust? You can get a lifetime subscription for $40.
That's pretty good.
Well, considering it's $30 a year.
Yeah, yeah. And it looks like they support Windows, the Mac, they support Android and iOS and Windows Phone.
They support pretty much everything.
Nearly everything.
Yeah.
I don't see any Linux there, but... That's okay. Linux has their own options. They roll their own stuff.
Right.
And I also wanted to tell you that, you know, every once in a while I'll call and I'll find some things that I think are pretty neat and helpful and free. And a couple things I found were made by Crystal Disk.
Okay.
One is Crystal Disk Mark, and one is Disk Info. And they're both free, and they're just an executable file, nothing to install. And they give you a lot of helpful information about your hard drives and the state of your hard drives. And I found a lot of luck with that, too.
Okay. So it's great, utility software for storage.
Software.
Okay.
Right. Mark is a disk benchmarking.
Okay. And I'm looking at info here, and it looks like it's a tool that can report back to you lots of information about your drives, whether they're
very
hard
nice.
Drives or solid state.
Thanks.
Oh, no problem. And another one that I found was in, believe it or not, the Microsoft Store. There is a basic free version of Adobe Photo Express.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're looking for a really simple, easy way to just enhance your photos, this program's killer.
Okay.
Because it's simple. Simple to use, and does pretty much everything the basic user wants to do. Most people get into Photoshop and are just lost.
Right. Well, yeah,
you know?
It's a powerful tool.
Even if you wanted to go to a free program, say like the GIMP,
right,
it's still very, very confusing.
Right. But if all you're trying to do is remove red eye or straighten out
enhance
a picture
it.
Or whatever.
Yeah, if you want to make something in sepia tone or you want to give it, you know, a classic look or something like that, or just
dust
cropping,
removal.
Resizing, it does it beautifully, very easy.
Nice. Well,
so
thanks.
I just wanted
thanks
to throw those few
that.
Things out to you.
Perfect, thanks.
You're welcome.
That's
appreciate
great.
It. That's, yep. That's what we love. Thanks. There's... people tend to overlook the... whatever they call the store in Microsoft, the Microsoft Store, I guess.
We've overlooked it so much we don't even know what it's called.
Right. Well, I mean, people know that if they want stuff on a Mac,
There was a whole ad campaign. You know, there's an app for that.
Right, exactly. If you want something on an iOS or whatever, then you know that.
Right.
And by osmosis, you know that that's true for Android as well.
Sure.
So, and for your Chromebook, there's the Chrome Store.
Uh-huh.
So you understand those things, but people tend to forget that there is one of those for Windows as well.
Right.
So if you have Windows 10, there's a store for that as well. The Windows Store is available, and you can download an amazing array of stuff from that. Now, not all of it is from Microsoft.
No, that's true.
In fact, the vast majority of it is
from Microsoft. So it might work good.
Well, so it might work, but it is set up to install as easily as you install stuff on an iPad or an Android phone.
Right.
You just click on it, it installs it, and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And so people forget that that's there, and you can search it for all kinds of things. So if you're looking for photo editing, search for photo editor.
Right.
And one of the things you'll find is the Adobe Photoshop Express. And you can, some things are for pay. And some things are free, so be careful what you click on. But you can find lots and lots of free utilities, free programs. In fact, for anybody with Windows 10, I always tell them, look there first.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so much easier to install stuff from there.
Yeah.
And updating it is easier and everything else. So make sure that those of you on Windows 10... take advantage of that, just like iOS people or Android people take advantage of theirs, and Chromebook people. You know, I tell people that all the time. Go to the Chrome store, look for this, click install, you're done.
That's right. Yeah, there's no fiddling or reaching for the credit card or
right.
It's
and
all
so
built in.
Right, and so and people expect that of their phones and of their tablets, but they're surprised that it's available for the desks, too.
Yes, right. Well, yeah, and I think this goes back to the conversation we were having at the top of the hour, that I think that there is a progression that's happening slowly but surely towards having computers be less of a hobbyist device, as they've started out to be, and move to more of a consumer-based, give it to me and make it easy. I don't want to worry about what the guts are of the machine. I just want to be able to take photos. I want to be able to see what I want to see. I want to be able to communicate with whom I want to communicate with. And we're moving towards that as a much more broader consumer device.
Right. The thing of it is, though, is it's a mindset. We've had PCs for so long, and it's always been a daunting task to do something or get it installed and get it up and get it working. Whereas tablets and phones were right from the get-go. All you got to do is quick put this on. It works.
Yeah, there was no administration.
Yeah, there was no big fiddling around or anything else. It was very user-friendly out of the gate. Whereas Windows and, you know, PCs, it was always a daunting task to get this program on there, and you had to adjust it for this and that, and then to get it working.
There were so many groups involved. There were the groups that made the motherboard. There were the groups that made the video card. There were the groups that made the storage. There were the groups that made your monitor hardware, any other peripherals you might have, printers, scanners, etc. And you had to sort of act as the intermediary between all of those in order to make them configured and work correctly.
Yep.
Right.
And with tablets, you know, a lot of that is all built in.
Yeah. It's an Android operating system, and boom.
And what the part that you need to be concerned about is several levels above that. And truth be told, that's what regular people want.
That's what most people want. The question then becomes, who do you trust?
That's true.
And that's what Dave is saying. He doesn't trust Microsoft to do that because their track record is horrible.
They may not have your best interests at heart. They have the interests that they have.
And what guarantee are they going to give people that if, you know, say I'm a small business person and I buy into, all right, yeah, you know, this would be handy. Like you were saying, you know, I don't have to hire an IT person. I'm going to put my faith in there. And then all of a sudden they do a patch and it bricks my machine.
Right.
And now I can't do any of my work, and I'm totally hosed until they get around to fixing it.
Well, that's exactly... I have updated a million Google devices. They've never bricked anything.
Nope.
You've updated a million Apple devices. They've never bricked anything.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
But many, 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 many people have had Windows devices bricked.
Yeah.
And so people don't trust Microsoft to do what they trust Apple and Google to do.
Well, it's just like, you know, like we've gone back to a simple thing like, say, Windows Defender.
Sure.
Oh, I trust that. Why? How often do they update?
Right.
People don't know because they don't get a notice every so often like you would with Super Anti-Spyware or Malware Bytes that, oh, there's an update. Windows may update it maybe once every other month, the Defender part.
Right.
Yeah, forget it. Whereas those other programs are updating sometimes 2 and 3 times a week.
Right. And yes, and to their to give Microsoft their due, part of their issue is the fact that they don't control the hardware. So Apple controls all its hardware.
Yep.
There are no surprises.
That's right. Yeah, they know precisely what's in the box.
Right. Google is either updating something that is not an issue for hardware, like the browser.
Sure.
I mean, all the drivers are already controlling the video and the everything
That's right.
else.
They're at a different level. Yeah.
Right. Or it's handled by the manufacturer. Samsung does the lower level stuff for their phone. Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the same for Chromebooks. Toshiba, Asus, or HP does all the lower-level driver stuff for their devices.
Right.
And then they hand that to Google. So when Google does an update, if those things are needed, they're added right there. But they're done by that other company.
Right. And Microsoft's different.
Microsoft is different.
And they've always have been.
And that's part of their problem when it comes to not bricking your machine.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The options that could be in the box are voluminous.
Right.
You really don't know.
And so, you know, I'm not saying that Microsoft is sloppy or they have worse programmers.
It's something out of their control.
It's something out of their control, but that doesn't stop. That doesn't mitigate the fact that it still happens.
Yeah.
Right.
And so people, while they don't even think about it with Apple or Google, think twice with Microsoft.
So let's say, what if you buy Microsoft-specific stuff? What if you get that, what was the tablet? Not the tablet.
The Go.
The PC
the
they
Surface.
Had. The Surface, where you set the giant LCD down and you can draw on it, and they had
right.
the little dial.
Right, the Microsoft Surface.
Yeah. So if you're doing those and running into this rental issue or other Microsoft-managed services,
right.
do you end up with a similar problem? Or because they know what's in it?
It's interesting. Microsoft has had issues with their Surface tablet, which is the most known of their hardware devices, right? It's the tablet that looks like an iPad with a keyboard.
Yeah.
Right? It's a...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a machine that's trying to serve two roles.
Right. The original Surface was very underpowered and didn't work very well. The Surface 2... they bricked that one. The Surface Go right now has such a horrible battery life. Nobody's happy at all. and it goes on and on. So it's not their shining moment. Let's just put it that way.
Room for improvement.
Now, they haven't bricked any Surface Go's yet because there haven't been any Surface Go's yet. But they certainly did brick some Surface 2s. And if they can't avoid bricking their own hardware... there's a problem.
You think?
So, and that's, you know, I've...
Yeah.
Yes, you can get individual Macs that brick on an update, and individual Chromebooks that brick on an update.
But it's not a systemic.
It's not systemic, yeah. Exactly. And for mm-hmm. Microsoft, it's been systemic.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's a problem. Sure. Because any one device can have any one problem. And that, you know, there's... The question is, it's a numbers game.
And what you know definitely goes against them is just not this system, but all their other operating systems and everything else, the patches and that, they've got a long track record of one, not supporting it, or getting around to fixing it, could be months, months later. Oh, well, we knew about this hole or that patch and that 6 months
ago.
Yeah, 6 months ago, and we're just getting around to fixing it now.
Yep.
Oh, gee, thank you. Yep. You're really looking out for me.
All right, yeah. I've done a little bit.
Whereas my Chromebook, I don't even worry about that because in the middle of the night, it will update stuff, and I turn it on, and oh, it did an update.
Yeah. Well,
and it's working fine.
I think that's where they want to get to. I think again, the
I agree, that is where they want to get to.
I don't want to ride that road.
Well, so, and that's the problem, because, again, they're going to update. What Google does and what iOS does and everybody else does, if they find an issue, they update that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has gathered issues.
Compiles them.
And then issues one gigantic update. And that's useful for businesses because businesses don't want to see updates every day.
It's true.
But a lot of little updates are often more manageable than a giant update, particularly a giant update that you can't stop from happening.
It's true.
All right. That music tells me that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But hey, we know you're a slow learner, so you're going to get another chance to do it again. We're only going to take a medium break right now, and we'll be back for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You may not have known this, but you are listening to Soundbites with Dennis Worster, who is ably sitting in for Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. Dave Enright, who's managed to not hit the wrong buttons yet this week. Who knows how or why? Sorry, I didn't mean to jinx it. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more sound bites here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are a member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe for this date of 4 August 2018.
Yep.
For our European friends.
That's right.
And our military friends. 4 August.
In other words, we're weeks away from our birthday.
Yes, we are, just weeks away, and weeks away from Soundbite's birthday as well.
Well, that's what I meant, is Soundbite's birthday.
Yeah, coming
because
up.
Because that's Labor Day weekend, is usually when we depict.
It'll be our 29th year on the air, start of our 29th birthday.
Okay. Yep.
Start of our 30th year on the air.
Amazing. Amazing.
God, I'm old.
We got to come up with a plan.
We got to come up with a plan.
What are we going to do?
For our 30th anniversary.
Yeah.
That's next year.
Call in if you know us what the 30th anniversary is.
Yeah, right. Whatever that is. Well, we had a 25th.
Right. I remember that one.
Rob was kind enough to throw us a little party, so we'll have to see what we do for 30.
Oh, cool.
So that was very nice. The Soundbites
cruise.
Look, we've talked about that over and over and over again, and I'm 100% for it.
We could do the show, right there off the boat.
That's exactly right. We do the show off the boat. We could have
canal cruise or something bigger.
No.
We're going to go big or stay home.
Hey, I'm just asking.
Through the Caribbean or the Caribbean, depending on how you want to do it.
That's right. We'll
film. Well, no, it's too hot to go down there. You got to go north. Let's go up to Alaska.
North to Alaska. We're going north.
Because it's summer right now. My son just came back from Cuba and down the Key West, and he said, I says, well, how'd you enjoy it? He goes, it was hot and humid.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's summer down there.
The tropics, yeah. Yes.
But if we plan the trip maybe later in the fall, then we could do the cruise,
Sure.
Do like an October cruise.
Right. We don't have to do it actually on the birthday. We can
delay it a month and go October, go south.
Yeah, that's
cool. I'm liking this.
Work on it, Rob. You're on it. Rob is on it, ladies and gentlemen.
That's good news.
You just got to call him and support it. And,
send in an email supporting the Soundbites cruise for the 30th.
You can come and hang with us for the whole week.
Come
That'll
and
be
float
fun
on the boat.
Yep. And I suspect, and I don't know this is true, but I suspect that Rob might just be up for a cruise.
4 day. We could even do a short one. 4 day cruise.
4 day cruise. Why not?
Yeah.
All right. Microsoft plans to raise the price of its perpetually licensed Office suite by 10% in October. That's the other thing. Whatever it costs this month, it's going to cost more next month. The increase is a part of a larger strategy that clearly points toward encouraging customers that have avoided licensing Office 365, or now Microsoft 365, to do so. Microsoft announced the price increase on its partner network website on Wednesday. Again, what they tell the public and what they tell the partners and what they tell the investors.
Three different
partners,
things.
Investors usually get the truth. Public, not so much.
Get the marketing.
Right. and I quote,
I would debate with even that. I probably, to keep face with some of their partners and everything else and keep things going.
No, you cannot lie to your partners or your investors. You cannot, because if investors they catch you, you're in trouble. Office 2019 commercial prices will increase 10% over current on-premises pricing, the company said. According to a separate FAQ, the Office 2019 price jump represents a significant value added to the product over time and better reflects costs and customer demand and align with cloud pricing. The application bundle will not be the only component to see a price increase. Also slated for an October 1 boost will be prices for on-premises servers, including Windows Server 2019 Standard Edition and what Microsoft dubs productivity servers, which include Exchange, SharePoint Server, and Project Server. So those servers' prices will climb by 10%.
Okay.
So if you're buying any of those licenses, and in fact, even more importantly, the CALS,
the client access license, right.
You don't just buy the operating system, you buy the right to connect to that operating system.
And you pay by the person.
And you play by the person. So if you want 100 people, if you want 100 clients to be able to access the system, you have to buy 100 client access licenses or CALs.
And that's even if you've only got 10 people connecting to the server at a time.
Right, because they sell them in bundles.
Yeah.
And if
Other places do what's called a concurrent license, where if you have 100 people in your company and 10 of them need to connect to the server at any given time, you pay for 10.
Right.
But Microsoft does it differently.
Right. So the CALs will also jump up the price of those. Prices for Enterprise CAL and Core CAL suites that bundle several separate CALs will go up by 10%, but remote desktop service per device CAL will climb 30%. Because Microsoft said they want to match the per-user price.
And you can get all that other stuff for free through Google.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a separate issue. Or Linux.
So what's the incentive? I mean, they're going to raise it 10%, and they talk about cloud storage and all that. I get that right now with Google Docs.
Right.
I get free storage. All the applications that I would do with the Microsoft Office package, I can do in Google, and doesn't cost me a cent.
Right, right. But Microsoft charges. And Microsoft categorizes software by how it's paid for, right? Discriminating between a license that is bought outright from one that is essentially rented because it's paid for over time like a subscription. The term perpetual license refers to a software license that's paid for with a single upfront fee, which in return gives the buyer the right to use the software in perpetuity. So that's how you've paid for Windows up till now. In other words, the license has no expiration date. Users may run the suite as long as they want. Now, Microsoft may stop supporting it.
Or the equipment that it takes to run it may stop working.
Right. Right. On-premises software is by definition installed on an individual's or company's own devices and servers. The alternative to a perpetual license is a subscription. It's the rental model. The flip side to on-premises is cloud-based with software packed into a service provider's servers, then accessed remotely. Microsoft defended the changes, including the new pricing for perpetual licenses of Office 2019, saying it wants to create consistency and transparency across our purchasing channels and get customers to realize the long-term cost savings of shifting to the cloud.
That is so deep. I can put my feet up because it's getting thick to even
get. You don't need boots. You need waders.
Yeah, definitely. That's their way of saying, we're hurting for money and send us more.
Yep. So are you ready to pay for a subscription for Windows and Office? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like our friend Linda did from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Linda, what's up?
Hi, question for you guys. I have a Sonos. I have a fairly new house, 3 years old, and they installed a Sonos system, you know, in the speakers and whatever, that I control from the Sonos app on my phone. However, it won't let me update it, and apparently when it was set up, I mean, I have updated, but my incorrect email was in there. So now it says, well, then, you know, if you don't recognize this email, you know, put another one in, which would be my correct one, and set up my account. And I just want to know if that affects anything.
It shouldn't.
It should not affect anything. It's just what method they're going to use to make contact with you to notify you about updates and things of that nature.
Right. So if they want, for example, to send you some code, or they want to send you a code to log on to get the update, or whatever it is they're going to do, they need to have your email address in order to do that. And if they've got the wrong one, then you can't get that stuff.
Right, and I can't tell what it is because it says L, whatever, and then, you know, there's just stars. And I've tried all kinds of combinations, but I think either, you know, things were transposed. But I didn't have a problem for a while, but I think once when they came to make a service call, that it may have, you know, that's when they may have changed it mistakenly.
Yeah, yeah. One thing you should, now, if they came to make a service call, you've probably got a phone number.
Oh, I know. I mean, I know who installed it, and I tried contact. I just haven't heard anything, but yeah. I know you guys know everything.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Linda. That's not true, but thank you. But I would. Your first line of defense is making contact with the person who actually installed it.
Yeah.
He or she should be the one who is able to get you the fastest response from the company.
Okay. Have you got people waiting? I don't want to.
No, go ahead.
Okay. But I have have in front of me 1, 2, 3, 4, like 10 devices. I have the whole house DVR thing, the Sonos. But I had my own router and modem installed because when I moved into this new development, the internet was so slow. But now I'm not sure it's that fast, and I don't. And now, you know, the FBI warning came out to, you know, unplug your router. I don't know which one is my router. Is it the tall thing with flashing lights?
Probably. On the router. There should be, okay, there's a couple of ways to tell. Can you find a name on that router, any sort of company name like Linksys?
I think it's an M on one thing. It's the Motorola.
Okay.
Motorola definitely makes routers.
And modems.
And modems. So mm-hmm. it could be one of those. The flashy lights, do they have labels on them?
I'm sorry, do they have what?
Do they have labels on them, like TX, RX?
Oh, no, there's like a green one that's flashing, and then a round one with like six dots, and then there's a blue arrow up, blue arrow down.
Okay,
and
that's
then
probably
like
a modem.
A green that looks like an on-off thing.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Okay, so that one is your modem. That one connects your house to, I'm guessing, Spectrum or your cable TV provider? Okay. So that one is your modem, and you can feel free to label that in the future or however you want to do that.
I will.
And then connected to that is a different device. Usually, it can be the same device, but I'm guessing in your particular situation, because you have your own, that you have a separate device that is acting as your router. And your router takes that single connection from Spectrum or whoever your internet service provider is and splits it so that many different devices in your home can all use the same internet connection at the same time.
Correct. Okay. Okay. Well, I also have, Apple TV box. I know what that is. I think, I don't know what to say. So if this is the modem, what does a router look like? I mean, is it a big,
usually, one thing,
and it'll have a bunch of antennas off the back.
Right.
Of it.
And normally, you know, these items are together.
Nearby.
They're usually near each other. So it won't hurt. If you go ahead and shut everything down in that area, in other words, unplug it.
From the power,
both the router and the modem and everything else, because you're doing a total shutdown. It's like if you lost power Okay.
Okay.
In this
okay.
way, you're start. This way, you'll know you'll hit the right thing
right.
if you unplug right. both all those items, because you're not going to hurt anything. You first shut down your PCs, all your devices. Shut them down. Turn them all off.
Okay.
All right. So then, when you go ahead and turn off the router and the modem and all that, you wait, say a minute or two, and then go around and turn the modem on and the router. Let them fully boot up.
Yep.
Right.
Let them come right
okay.
back up. Then give them a good 5 minutes. So
that's
if they got to do
yeah.
anything else, you know, to check anything or all that type of stuff, it's done. Then you can go around starting to turn on your other devices.
Yeah.
Okay.
So think of it as like a tree. The root of the tree is your router. The root of the tree is your internet service provider, and that's the modem that comes into your house. The cable comes into your house and connects to that modem.
That Motorola box.
Then that
right.
connects to your router, and then that's the trunk of the tree, and then the branches are all the devices you've got.
Okay, because I have this control floor system.
That's another device. That's another branch.
Right.
So
I mean,
when you shut okay. things off, you shut them off from the top of the tree down.
So from the outlet.
Right. No. From the end devices, like your laptops and all that other stuff. Down to the modem, which is the last thing you turn off. But when you turn them back on, you turn them on from the ground up. So modem first, then your router, then all the branches, the devices.
Okay.
Got it?
Yes. And just one other quick thing.
Hold on, Linda. Stay on the line, Linda. We got to take a quick break. So stay on the line. We'll come back to you after the break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Linda from Pittsford, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Linda from Pittsford on the line. What's up, Linda?
Just another question. In my house, I have what I guess you'd consider a landline radio, a Bose Wave radio, but sometimes when I'm trying to listen to the program, there's so much static comes in, I can't hear anything. And I think I had the same experience in my car, which is fairly new and has the Bluetooth and all that, whatever you call it, all the fancy stuff.
Sure.
Is there a reason for that? Or I didn't know if my Bose Wave AM/FM radio is old. I mean, it is several years old. If it has anything to do with it.
Well, it's unlikely. Does it happen on every station?
No.
Right, but it happens on our station.
Yes, and a common known AM station.
Right. One of the problems with radio in general is that you are a slave to the power of the signal.
Yeah. Signal direction.
The Federal Communications Commission tells people what frequency they can be on and how much power they're allowed to have. And our station is not a high power station. So it may well be that, particularly being in Pittsford, you're closer to the edge of the signal and therefore get a little bit of static. If your radio were maybe on a higher floor or, you know, I don't know what's between you and our antenna, that sort of fare. But if that were true, you might get a much better signal. But you will find that some signals just signals attenuate. That is to say, they get weaker over distance. And when you don't start out with a super powerful signal, it attenuates. It gets weaker faster.
Right. So it's probably not your equipment.
It's probably not your equipment at all.
And the direction that, you know, our antennas admit the signal. You know, they can direct them in certain directions. And like Nick was saying, you can be on the out fringe or just sometimes, especially with the Bose on the back, you can do what they call an external antenna. And all it is a simple little piece of like copper wiring that you just string out and it gives will pick up better signals.
Right. Now, for example, I'm in my car. if I'm driving around, I can pick up Jazz 90.1. Great. But as I pull into my driveway, there's a hill that I get behind between, you know, me and the antenna, or I don't know what it is. But as I pull into my driveway, the signal gets horrible.
Okay, I understand. So I'll just try moving my radio around in the house.
Yeah, see what happens.
Yeah.
And try to drive where I can, when you're on the drive.
Perfect.
Try to drive near you.
Well, now, don't forget, Linda, you can also listen to the show on the live stream.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you go to Jazz 90.1, jazz901.org, on your web browser,
you can listen to that.
You can listen to the station through that, or of course, you can also get. So, what you'll see is the live now section in the upper right hand corner, and right now it says live now sound bites 12 to 2, and then, or alternately, of course, you can also find a link on the Soundbites website at soundbites.org. That says listen live on Jazz 90.1. And if you click on that, it essentially takes you to the same place.
Okay, great.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
You guys are great.
Thanks, okay. You too.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I did a little research. I found out the OpenVPN tool that I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
It's called Viscosity, and you can get it at sparklabs.com. It's not free. It's $14. So... I think your security is worth $14.
Exactly.
It's very nice to use. It looks
is that
nice.
Mac and PC?
It is both Mac and Windows. You can buy it and use it immediately. It will work very nicely with your router that you have at your house. So if you are the person who wants to set up VPN at your own home, and while you are out and about at the coffee shop or at a hotel, know that your connection is handled back to your home base. And then it goes out to the rest of the world from there. Viscosity is a tool you could use to do that.
There you go.
Perfect. Perfect. Being secure on the internet is very important these days. And there are a million different websites that now have HTTPS as their header. And so that you know that's secure. So, for example, the Soundbites website.
Yeah.
Is secure.
Right.
And so is the Security Tango now.
Right.
It didn't used to be because it used to be that you had to pay for security.
Right. Well, yeah.
And
the
I didn't.
In the oldest days of the web,
right.
There was no secure layer on top of things. And
right.
I think what happened is a lot of the businesses that wanted to start doing e-commerce, they wanted to start being able to sell things. People like, you know, Amazon, when it was
right.
a brand, when it was a little baby website. Wanted to be able to have people pay with their credit card and handle that. And they knew that they needed to keep that information safe. So
right.
they worked on developing this, not them specifically, but the Internet Engineering Task Force
right.
worked on this and set up some tools that allowed people to send information across the internet in a secure way.
Right.
And that's kind of become the default now, you know,
right.
20 years later.
Right. So if you wanted to buy something or you logged in, you needed security.
That's right.
But, for example, with the Security Tango website, you can't log in. There's nothing you can do on this site except read it, so I never bothered
sure.
to buy security for it.
Right.
Now, however, Google dings you on their search engine if you don't have HTTPS.
That's right. Google has a tool called PageRank, and PageRank
right.
is a rating of your particular website.
And that determines how high you are in the listings.
Yes. Websites with a high PageRank rating are considered trustworthy, considered information dense and useful, and then rate higher on Google search results.
Right. And so in order for me to... actually continue to make the Security Tango available to the most number of people,
mm-hmm.
I needed to make it HTTPS so that Google would continue to rank it high.
Right.
And so I've done that. So now it's HTTPS. Even though you can't log in, even though there's nothing you can actually do.
That's true. That's true.
But
and
that's,
the Security Tango may have to get an update soon based on Apple's new equipment with the T2 chip.
Right.
And we'll probably have to talk about that offline at some point.
Right.
But, there's going to be some new rules about how you can start up a machine and how you can deal with these potential factors. Apple's working really hard so that if you want it, you can have a secure boot chain. You can know that the firmware is the stuff that Apple gave the machine. you can know that the OS is all the bits that Apple said, yep, these are the ones we intend for you to run.
Right.
It has not been messed with in the meantime. And all the way up to the applications. These are the applications that you bought from us. We know that they are the same as the developer made them, and we blessed that they were appropriate and useful at the time that the developer showed them to us.
Right.
Dealing with potential anti-spyware tools or anti-malware tools, those are new things we'll have to figure out, and we'll just have to make sure the security tango keeps up.
Right. So far, the only operating system that really does that is the Chrome OS.
That's true.
But yes, Apple is following that lead and going to be doing much the same thing.
Yep, it's that same trajectory we've been talking about the whole show.
Yep, it's exactly right. We need to make everything more secure and easier for people to use and easier for people to deal with. And we're very happy to see that they're doing that. So here's a story that lots and lots of people have been confused about. They're not sure quite what it means, but here it is. Apple, the company Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak founded in 1976 in possibly not a garage, became the most valuable company in the world in 2012, passing Microsoft as iPhone sales pushed the company into the stratosphere. Today, Apple's dominance of the financial world has reached a new milestone. The company has now topped $1 trillion, that's trillion with a T, in market capitalization, which is the collective value of all of its shares of stock. With a market cap of $884 billion, Amazon is Apple's closest rival.
Nice try, guys.
Google's parent Alphabet is trailing with $855 billion. Microsoft is a paltry $827 billion.
Fourth place.
Fourth place in market cap. Apple's value pushed past a trillion as the value of shares rose 3% earlier this week following the company's quarterly earnings report and aided by Apple's move in May to begin buying back up to $100 billion worth of stock with its stock pile of cash, which of course doesn't really help anybody but Apple, but that's the point. The company's stock is now valued about $207 per share. Some of the boost also comes from Apple's swelling service sales. Collectively, Apple Pay, iTunes, iCloud, Apple Care services brought in about $9.5 billion in revenue in the most recent quarter. Apple is not the first company to reach $1 trillion market cap. That was a Chinese company called PetroChina, an oil and gas producer in 2007, but which today, by the way, is only worth $200 billion. So there's
easy
a cautionary
come, easy
tale.
Go, right?
What?
Easy come, easy go.
Exactly right. Apple's in better shape, should stay on top longer. What they are is the first U.S. company to reach $1 trillion, not the first company. Many people will scorn the act of marking this supposed success at all, noting also that Apple has also hoarded more than $250 billion in cash offshore, partly to avoid paying U.S. taxes, or that Apple has achieved its monster profit on the back of Chinese factory labor working under appalling conditions, or that like every company that manufactures computer hardware at all, Apple must use raw materials that are sometimes mined by children amid inhumane circumstances in horrific war-torn places. But in a culture obsessed with numerical markers and records, Apple will forever be the first U.S. company to reach $1 trillion. So how much Apple stock do you own? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Those of us who bought Apple stock at a couple of bucks a share.
Yep, I bought it at 22.
Are in pretty good shape.
Sold it at 24.
Yeah. It's grown in value from 2 to 200.
Yeah. No, yeah, if you invested, you would have 10 times as much money now as you invested
but
10 years ago.
100 times as much money. Well, yeah. It's when you bought.
Yeah.
10 times as much, yeah. And yes, it's true that market cap is
that's one measure.
Only one measure, and it's not actually that useful a number in terms of how profitable a company is or anything else. But it certainly is a milestone, and Apple is the first company to reach it, and you got to give them
first
some
US company. Yep.
Kudos for that.
That's right. Yeah, it's been a long time. For those of us that remember being Apple fans in the 90s, when Apple was, 45 days away from
bankruptcy? Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Like, the doors are locked, and you go to work in the morning, and you're like, huh, why won't the door open?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's because the company's closed.
Yeah, people forget that they were there.
That's right.
You know, we remember the successes and we forget the failures, but Apple was hours away at one point from bankruptcy.
Yeah, Microsoft came in and gave them a quick cash infusion because they were having anti-competitive issues with the courts.
Yep.
And this was seen as a good move for everybody involved, and Steve Jobs was thankful for that. And they took that and found a bunch of consumer items that were easy to sell and lower cost and was something that people wanted to own, and things kind of mushroomed from there.
Yep. But and Apple users would like to forget that they were bailed out by Microsoft.
It's any port in a storm, man.
Well, yeah. And not every companies, no company has
and by the way,
every
that was
high
a
note.
It was a good investment for Microsoft. You know, what are those shares worth now?
Well, and that's exactly right. They got a lot of shares for that, and so the real winner in all of this is Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Yet again.
But, they're not complaining too much.
But they're not complaining too much, and you're right. The main reason they did it is because the only way they were getting out of the antitrust suits
was to say that there was still competition.
Right, and so when that competition almost died, they shorted up. It was only good business practice for them. Had it happened a year earlier or a year later?
Right.
Could have been
happened at exactly the right time. So Apple was happy to take that infusion of cash, and everybody won. There's a little irony there. But
it was weird. You know, you go to a software store, and this was before the days of buying software online.
Right.
It would be a physical store you'd go into, and there'd be boxes that had CDs in them. And you would put the CD in your computer and install the software. And in those days, the stores were segmented based on what computer you had. And the vast majority of the store, I'm going to say 90%, 85, 90%, was PC-flavored software for Windows.
Yep.
And somewhere in the back weird corner that was sort of dusty.
Egghead.
And the lights above you would sort of flicker because it was just an area that wasn't well maintained. You'd find, you know, the three shelves of Mac-related software. Just
three?
Well, when
they were big
good,
boxes.
Yes, the boxes were big. People don't remember that it was, you know, the redheaded stepchild of the computer industry for
yeah, it
so,
really was.
So
and don't forget, those were also the days that when you got the software, it not only came in a box with a disk, and it might have been a floppy disk.
May have.
Originally. It also had a manual. Remember manuals?
Printed manuals.
Yes. Unbelievable
stuff.
You could
sit down and read them and circle things and
yep.
and refer to them when things weren't working. And they would have information about how to make contact with the company when things didn't work.
Yep.
It was incredible.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, sorry. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour, and I'm apparently living in the past. When we are Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we, collectively, are Sound Bites.
We
have Doug from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Just two things. It's pouring here in Rochester, to let you know.
Thank you.
And the second thing, there is an electronics recycling event next Saturday from 9 in the morning until 12 noon at Bishop Kearney High School.
Okay. Is that a week from today or 2 weeks from today?
It's 1 week from today.
Okay.
From 9 in the morning until 12 noon.
At Bishop Kearney, you said?
At Bishop Kearney, 125 Kings Highway South.
Cool.
Great.
Perfect.
Good to know. So we will go and get the pickup truck and unload my basement, and we'll be over there.
Yeah, exactly. So this is an important thing for everybody to understand. You can't just throw away electronics.
You can, but it's illegal.
Well, yes, you can. Yeah. Yes, of course you can. But it is illegal because there are toxic elements in it. And so what you're supposed to do is bring them to a place that will then, and generally you pay to do this.
Right.
You bring it to a place, you pay them, and they strip out all the gold and everything else and make some money back from that. But they also then properly dispose of the toxic elements in the devices. And they're not toxic. To you, it's not like you're going to sit there and breathe into the serial port and the USB port and get sick. they're toxic in landfills and in the environment. But having an event like the one that Doug is talking about, where everything is free to you. Now, yes, they're still going to make money by stripping out the electronic.
That's
bits
okay.
and that's exactly
the rest
fine.
Of it's going to get processed properly,
right?
And
it's completely fine. They deserve to make some money for their efforts, and that's the money they're going to make.
Right. So pull the VCRs out of your basement, get your old TiVos out,
right.
Pull out your old CRT TVs. What else should they get, guys?
Those
two
phones
radios.
That have been sitting in the drawer. When
oh,
you
yeah.
you know as you upgrade phones, you throw the old one in a drawer
because you know you might need it.
You might need it. It since you have not yet brought them to the women's shelter.
Yep.
You know you're not going to do that, even though that's what you should do with them. You can bring them down next Saturday to the electronics place, and all those old printers and routers and everything
digital
you've got
cameras.
Sitting around in the basement, the old cameras, the old all the junk that you've got sitting around, thinking, you know, someday I'm going to buy a soldering iron and do something with these.
No, just lose it.
Just lose it. Just bring it to
life
the event.
Is short.
Thanks for pointing that out, Doug.
You had another thing, Doug?
No, there is a limit of two CRTs per vehicle.
Okay, good
right,
to know.
Right, right, and that's a big thing. If you've got an actual television
yep.
tube
parents
device,
ask your kids what a CRT is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had an old
or the other way around. Actually,
I had an old Spark station, and it had a 19-inch. Actual
yeah.
CRT monitor,
right. And it was
70 pounds.
Yeah, no, they were ridiculous.
70 pounds.
I remember hoofing those around. I worked at a marketing company.
Yeah.
And we had artists with 21-inch monitors, and they were
ridiculous.
I'm glad I was in my 20s at the time.
Well, exactly.
I
got it upstairs, and about 7 years later, I thought, I need to get somebody to get this downstairs.
That's right. Now I'm carrying them two at a time. I carry 23-inch LCDs around.
And right. It's just
no problem.
Not a problem.
I can do that. No sweat at all.
Yep.
But yes,
all right.
Okay. So two CRTs. So big tube TVs or large, deep, glass-fronted
Right, the ones with actual tubes in them.
With glass.
Right. Thanks, Doug. We appreciate this.
Okay, Nick. Have a good one.
You too. Keep smiling.
Yep, you too. Bye-bye.
And the important news, of course, is that it'll be over in time for you to hear sound bites.
Oh, of course. You can listen to it on your drive home.
Yeah.
That's the important thing right there. But recycling is important for a whole bunch of reasons, not the least of which is that the stuff in there is toxic when it breaks down in the environment. So you definitely want to bring your stuff to the electronics recycling places
right. So
that you don't pollute the environment any more than it already is. And the ability to just hand it in for free next Saturday at Bishop Kearney from 9 to 12 is a very, very good thing.
It's going to save you some money. The other thing I learned about CRT TVs or monitors, is that there is a group of people who do vintage gaming. They do gaming on the old consoles. So the NES, the Super Nintendo, the Sega, all of the old consoles.
Sure.
And they want to connect them to TVs because the new modern TVs actually add a bit of delay before they produce the image on the screen. And it's, you know, it's just enough to be noticeable. So when they go to play for the true authentic experience, they want to play on a CRT TV.
Right.
So if you still have those and you're not going to take them to Bishop Kearney, get those suckers listed on Craigslist or something, or Facebook Marketplace or whatever, and give a gamer an opportunity to play on the vintage hardware. Chances are good they'll probably come and pick it up for free for you.
Yep.
So let them know.
Yeah. So definitely check one of those two out. Now, obviously, it's the other stuff. You've got old modems sitting around. You've got old computers sitting around. You've got old laptops sitting around.
Floppy
you know
disks,
you do.
Yeah. Old CDs, anything.
Anything. All that stuff. Bring it down to the electronics recycling event next Saturday, 9 to 12 at Bishop Kearney High School. It's a very good thing to do. It's a responsible thing to do. You've collected all this junk. Now it's time to get rid of it.
Yeah, do it now while the weather's good.
All right.
Do it next week before it starts snowing and nobody wants to haul stuff anywhere when the weather's bad.
Right. All right, our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy, what's up?
Hi, guys. Real quick, not taking anything away from the what's going on at Bishop Kearney next weekend, but if you can't get there, any day of the week you can go down to Goodwill Industries and they take the stuff.
Okay, so if you miss it at Bishop Kearney, you can head that direction.
Yep. Perfect. They take it and give it they've got a deal with Sun King who recycles this stuff, and apparently they get the money for doing it. So you help Goodwill, and if you're itemizing your stuff, they'll give you the itemized thing. If you're not, they give you a card. They punch every time you come in, and then after 5 donations, you get a gift card or something good at Goodwill.
Perfect. Good. Thanks, Andy.
No problem. Have a good day, guys.
You too. Bye-bye. So there's lots of opportunities to do that stuff, and there's a lot of opportunities to do good in this world, so you should do some good.
That's right.
Particularly since it doesn't cost you anything. All right, our next caller is some guy somewhere out in the wilds of the Midwest calling himself Steve. I'm sure that's an alias.
That is his real name.
Yeah, I'm a little bit east today.
Oh.
Finally got rid of the last customer. I mean, the final customer finally finished their shopping. And I did want to mention the how great Dennis is doing today. Thanks for
he always does an amazing job.
That's so nice. Thank you so much, Steve.
But I also want to mention the Apple Cider meeting is this week. It's users group week.
Okay. Great.
7 o'clock at the Risen Christ Lutheran Church on Route 250 in Parenton. Because the schools are closed for the summer, we met at the church. It's the same church we met at last year, for those that remember.
Cool. And what's the topic this week?
This week we are going to be talking about apps for model rocketry and model aviation.
Neat.
And so I'm going to be bringing in some of my rockets and some of the apps we can show off for it. Also, the VLC alternative media player for those weird apps like you use for model rocketry.
Okay.
And we're doing an ice cream social.
Hey.
Because August is swelteringly hot.
That's right. Give the people what they want.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds great.
Yeah, more information on our website at applecider.org. I'll put on my apple cider hat for a minute.
Sure.
And we have fun. Maybe Dennis will come out. I know he's been busy lately. He hasn't made it to a meeting in a while.
Yep. Oh, I would really like to be out there. I will make sure that I check my schedule.
And there's ice cream.
And there's ice cream, yeah.
If all else fails.
Yeah,
we're not going to be launching any rockets this year. Last year we had a quadcopter demonstration, and he was able to fly out of the parking lot. Rockets, you need a little more space than the church parking lot has.
Yeah.
That's true.
A little more space up too. You got to be out of the flight pads.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, okay. When we do our regular launches in at the Geneseo Airport, ironically, at an airport, we have a FAA waiver, and they issue a notice to airmen that there's going to be rockets flying around this airport, so be careful.
Right.
Yes, you don't want to be flying along in here. Clunk.
Well, what's interesting is because the National Warplane Museum is also there at the Geneseo Airport, most of those planes have already had rockets fired at them, and they don't need any more.
And they weren't made of cardboard and balsa wood.
Yeah,
those rockets weren't.
Most of them are aluminum, but there's some old ones in there that still might be a little fabric.
Yeah. But no, he's talking about the rockets that were fired at them.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Steve,
I should be there next week. We'll see you then.
All right, have fun.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And yes, Dennis, you have done another amazing job. I'm always pleased
to
see you here.
That's so nice to hear. I do try.
It's good to have you. You're very good. Not that we don't love Steve.
Mm-hmm. Everybody loves Steve.
He's still listening. We do love to have you here. It's very nice.
Good.
For those of you who are looking to make sure that you have recycled your electronics properly, both Goodwill and the electronics recycling event next week are very good things to know. And also, we talked a little bit about VPNs. Think carefully. Pay attention when you log on to a site, when you go to a website. If it's not someplace you have to log into, like Google,
mm-hmm.
Although Google is a secure website, it has the HTTPS designation. But although Google is a secure website, you don't log into Google, so it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you're just using their search, yeah.
If you're just using their search, then it doesn't matter.
Check the web addresses.
Well, what I'm saying. Yeah. And if you obviously if you're going to Google Docs,
yeah.
or iCloud or yep. Microsoft Cloud or any of those things, be very aware of anytime you log into anything. Make it a habit before you start typing your username and password to look up and see two things. One, that you're really on the website you think you're on. And two, that it starts in HTTPS. Although so many of them do now, but still be aware and be careful. Having your own home VPN is amazing. Having somebody else's VPN is generally very good. But even without those two, as long as you're on HTTPS, you're pretty secure. Mm-hmm. And there's no excuse anymore. There's a group called Let's Encrypt, which provides free encryption services.
Yeah, if you have a website and you want to add HTTPS services, you can do that.
Right.
And Let's Encrypt is a good way to do that.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for having me, you guys. I always appreciate the opportunity to come and sit and fill the chair.
Well, it's always a joy to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much.
You add a lot. And you're tall.
Well,
do you ever need to get anything off?
Than yours.
Well, that's true. If you ever need to get anything off an upper shelf,
right. Just give me a buzz.
It's the only reason we have you here. All right. That music tells me that you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense, and we're done for another week. And I think I might just go home and take a nap. That might happen today. And I want to thank Dave Enright, and as always, I want to thank Dennis Worster. I want to thank Steve Ray for calling in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always good. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best. No, we have no George this week?
We have something else. Something else equally.
It's a pre-recorded show.
Oh, it's a pre-recorded show this week. We will be back with another live show in just 166 hours. This is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Thank you.